We've got a new compute and data infrastructure sheriff in town. Actually, I shouldn't say new. Greg DiMichele has been part of Directions on Microsoft before he rejoined us late last year. But he's back now, and he's already been tasked with helping us and our members figure out what the heck Microsoft is doing with Azure Local, the product formerly known as Azure Stack HCI. Welcome to the Directions on Microsoft podcast briefing. I'm Mary Jo Foley, the Editor-in-Chief here at Directions, and I'm your host for the series of podcasts for those interested in the Microsoft Enterprise IT ecosystem. Our topic today is Azure Local, but first, I wanted to reintroduce everyone to Greg. Hello, Greg. Thank you so much for taking the podcast plunge to kick off our first episode of 2025.
Well, thanks a lot, Mary Jo. It's a pleasure to be here, both back at Directions and on the podcast with you. I'm looking forward to our conversation.
All right. Well, Greg has worked not just at Directions, but also Microsoft, Google, AWS, Adobe, Twilio, and Confluent during his multi-decade tech career. At Microsoft, way back when, I remember you there, actually, he was involved in the initial creation and launch of Visual Studio and .NET. And then at Google, he led the product management team involved with the creation of the Google Cloud Platform. So here at Directions, you're going to be leading our coverage of data and infrastructure. And I'm curious how you would say your wide-ranging background, and especially your work at Google, is going to inform your coverage for us of this stuff.
Yeah, you know, I think everybody's career, you can think of it as having different chapters or different waves. And the first part of my career was really all about developers at Microsoft, developer division, Visual Studio. And it turns out the second part has really all been about infrastructure and data. And, you know, In a way, I've always been fascinated by infrastructure. I'm like the person when they watch This Old House, I'm always looking at the part where they're putting in the new plumbing and the electrical system. Go, how's that work? And what was fascinating at Google is it's really where I saw the intersection of both of those things. If you think about what Google is, they're a company that applies infrastructure to the problem of getting value out of data. And I don't know, that's a pretty accurate description of what most enterprises are trying to do today. Mm-hmm. I also think this intersection of infrastructure and data is where most enterprises can get the most value. If you think about it, if you're an established company and you're trying to fend off a bunch of disruption, what's the one thing that a 50-year-old company has that no startup has? 50 years worth of data on your customers and your products and your supply chains. So the ability to apply computing infrastructure to the problem of how do I get value of my data, I think is super fascinating. And I think it's actually where most enterprises can get the most bang for the buck out of their IT investment.
Okay, sounds good. Last time you worked at Directions, which I looked up your resume, 2002 to 2008, Microsoft was a very different company, right? And I'd assume at that time, our customers had really different questions about the products and the licensing. So now that you're back, I'm curious, you've only been back a short time, but what are some of the biggest differences you've started noticing in terms of customer pain points?
Yeah, it is. Everything is different if you think about the IT world now compared with in the 2000s. What's different? Well, starting off, very few customers are pure Microsoft shops anymore. Mm-hmm. Right? There was a time when you could go to a lot of enterprises and they were simply top to bottom Microsoft, from the data center to the desktop to the email. That's really hard to find. Every company at this point has some Max somewhere in their creative departments, at the very least, if not their executives. They have iPads and iPhones. They've got cloud systems that maybe are Amazon in addition to their Microsoft. They've got some Linux someplace. So the whole notion of all I have to do is go to Microsoft, that's kind of shattered. The other thing that's quite different is the scope of what companies are trying to deal with. Previously, the problem was, I got a fixed IT budget. How do I manage the life cycle of my servers and infrastructure? Is this new? Should I update to the new Windows server? Should I skip this one? But now, if you're an IT manager, you're trying to digest multiple huge disruptive waves all at once. You're just maybe getting your head wrapped around big data and what that's all about. When here comes the AI wave, you're just getting your hands on mobile devices, and all of a sudden you've got a remote mobile first workforce you're trying to digest. You're just getting your head wrapped around cloud, and all of a sudden containerization becomes a thing. Like any one of these things is a full-time headache for an IT pro, and you're doing all of them at once. And so that's, I think, the scope of what your typical enterprise IT manager or executive is dealing with is so much broader than it was in the 2000s. And I guess finally, Microsoft is the incumbent. In the 90s and 2000s, we forget this. Microsoft was the disruptor. Microsoft was the one coming in saying, hey, don't buy Sybase, don't buy Oracle. Our little SQL server has grown up and can do that. Windows NT isn't just a toy, it's an enterprise-grade operating system. Like Microsoft has spent so much of its time as the disruptor, and now they're the incumbent. And I think that changes kind of the dynamic. But it's also important to realize what hasn't changed. Microsoft is going to Microsoft. You know what I mean?
I do.
They're going to use licensing in creative ways to ensure that they get the money that they are attempting to get. We always used to have a saying, if you think you found a loophole in Microsoft licensing, you haven't. And even if you have, it'll get closed. So don't build a business plan around thinking you've discovered something in the fine print of a Microsoft license that lets you arbitrage some opportunity. It won't last. And Microsoft continues to be, I think, hard for customers to understand. We'll talk about this a little bit when we get to Azure Local, but the frequent renaming of products, the multiple ways of solving the same problem. That was as true then as it is today. And I think it's one of the things where our members tell us, I can't track the 83 ways to do a virtual remote desktop. Give me some guidance. And so yeah, a lot of things are different, but the core of Microsoft is still the same.
I feel the same. I've been doing this for now 40 years as a tech reporter, and I feel like I sometimes thinking to myself, is this the old Microsoft or the new Microsoft? Because the old Microsoft is the new Microsoft, and vice versa, right?
It really is true. I think when I think about I when I was when I worked at Microsoft, it was the Bill Gates era. And obviously many things are quite different now. And it was also the Windows era.
It was.
And obviously the company is different today in that regard. They're not Windows. They're much more ecumenical in the way they think about platforms and those sorts of things.
I thought you were going to say they're Copilot, Copilot, Copilot.
Well, that gets back to our Microsoft's going to Microsoft. You know,
Yes, it
every
does.
we you and I've talked about this, every decade or so, some idea becomes the hotness in Microsoft, and the entire divisions of people suddenly try to attach their decade-old product to the new hotness.
Yep,
You
that's
know,
true.
whether it was Active X in the 90s, .NET. I remember when every product got .NET slapped on the
I
end
did
of
too.
it.
Yep.
And that phase, the good news is that phase will go away, but we are very much in that phase with Copilot
We
right
are.
now.
Yes, we are. Okay, let's talk about a different product now, because the one of the very first things you were asked to do when you came here was help us figure out Azure Local. And right before you came, we had been trying to get an update from Microsoft about Azure Local's predecessor, Azure Stack HCI. And we kept asking Microsoft, what's going on with it? It's been really quiet. What's happening? And so we figured at that point we're going to hear more at Ignite at the end of November. And we did. So you have been working on a report all about Azure Local, and I noticed in your report you had a great, what I think is a great short definition of Azure Local. You said Azure Local is a server OS based on, or sorry, derived from Windows Server, but managed with Azure tools. So I'd love you to expand a bit on this for our listeners, because I'm curious and a little confused still, I admit. Is Azure Local just a rebrand of Azure Stack HCI, or is Microsoft taking it in a whole new direction along with the name change, or both? I don't know.
Yeah, that's and this is where you have to distinguish between Microsoft's vision, intent, and direction and the reality of what the product is today. I'm doing a home remodel right now, and you quickly get used to the idea of the as-spec'd and the as-built. For Azure Local, the as-built is it's just a rename at the moment, right? It's just Azure Stack HCI with a new name. But if you look at the vision of what they want it to be, it is more expansive than that. It is their vision of how they are going to bridge the world of on-premise computing with the world of cloud, which, as we'll talk about in a little bit, I think is something that all the cloud vendors are interested in. So yes, as of today, it's a rename of Azure Stack HCI, but I think the rename does signal that their ambitions are broader than that.
Yeah, when we were talking about it in our editorial meeting, I think you used uncanny valley to describe it, which I liked. And I was thinking, yeah, it's neither fish nor fowl, right? It's not really an on-prem product, not really a cloud product. And then I was like, is it like AWS Outposts? I was trying to get my head around, like, what else is it like? I don't know if it is like anything else. I'm not sure.
No, I think you're on the right track with that. I mean, let's back up a second. Ever since AWS first came out with, the cloud, and particularly once they started to deliver services that weren't just the same thing you could get on-prem, customers have been saying, I want that, but I want it in my data center. The reality is, that's not going to happen, at least not in the way people originally meant it. A cloud data center isn't just a collection of racks. It's fundamentally designed as a single warehouse scale computer, and an on-prem data center isn't. But there are ways that to make these two worlds not be so distinct, to eliminate the need to say, oh, we have one set of tools and operational procedures we use when we're running our cloud systems, and we have a completely different one when we do our on-premise system. Our cloud system is running a newer version of SQL Server. Our on-prem, we have to manually update that, and it's two versions out of date. And so all the cloud vendors are trying to figure out some way to bridge these worlds for customers. AWS calls it Outposts. Oracle, I think it's Oracle Cloud at Customer. There's a great name. Google Distributed Cloud. They're all trying to do this. But I think the result is, at the moment anyway, Azure Local is a little bit in the uncanny valley. It looks cloudy, it looks like a cloud thing, but it's not quite. And it looks like an on-prem system, but it's not quite. It runs your own hardware, so that's kind of on-prem-y, but it has to be specially certified systems that are specifically deployed for this. It's on-prem, so in a sense, you control software deployment, but you got to follow a pretty intensive release update schedule just to maintain support. It runs in your data center, but it has to maintain a connection to a specific Azure zone. So as a result, it doesn't feel like an on-prem product, but it also doesn't feel like a cloud product. And I think where Microsoft goes with it next is really interesting for how do they resolve this? How do they take this product and make it really be the best of both instead of just sort of half of both, if that makes sense.
It does. Yep, that's good. All right, perfect place for us to take a quick break so that I can talk about the next in-person Directions on Microsoft Licensing Bootcamp, which will be happening April 22nd to 24th in Atlanta. So these boot camps are 18-hour plus trainings, and they're the perfect time for you and your team to figure out your Microsoft licensing problems in real time with your peers and the Directions on Microsoft team. So your company is probably spending millions of dollars on Microsoft licensing annually. Don't you wonder if you're overpaying? Do you have a good grasp of the complexities of Microsoft constantly changing licensing rules? And have you figured out how to use them to cut costs? We have got proven strategies and tactics that we can share with you. Do you want to crush your Microsoft EA negotiations? Then come to the Atlanta Bootcamp. Or if you cannot attend in person, you can join one of our upcoming virtual licensing trainings. In addition to boot camps, we also offer advisory services like EA negotiation support and Microsoft strategy assessments, where we can help you one-on-one with your specific Microsoft product questions and licensing issues. Go to directionsonmicrosoft.com or email info@directionsonmicrosoft.com, and you can learn more about all the different services that we offer. Okay, and now we're back with Greg talking all things Azure Local. So I'm also interested in a small form factor option that Azure Local has. I know when we had Azure Stack Edge, there were like small form factor devices, but is this the same thing? And who is this supposed to be for?
Yeah, these are all sort of targeting that use case of I have some location that isn't a giant multi-story data center, and I need to put some compute capacity there. It could be, you know, a retail location. It could be a factory. It could be oil rigs in the North Sea or mines deep underground. These are all places where you can imagine needing to collect data, process data, pre-process it. Basically do compute tasks that aren't in your data center. And the small form factor is an option to enable that. Previously, there was a pretty hefty minimum footprint you had to put with Azure Local. The servers had to have some fairly high system requirements. This new small form factor allows you to use a less powerful processor, one network card instead of two. It basically allows you to shrink the footprint, which opens up the possibility of an Azure Local installation in some of these places where previously it just economically wouldn't pencil out to be worth the money.
Okay. So I've also seen Microsoft say it is going to enable Azure Local customers to run completely disconnected. So I'm thinking, if you're Microsoft and you're a cloud-first company, do you really want to do that? Do you want to let customers completely be disconnected, or would that just discourage people from adopting if you don't let them do that?
Yeah, no, you're getting at a potential conflict between what's in Microsoft interests and what customers want. Yeah, you know, it's pretty obvious to see why customers would want this. Data sovereignty. You know, if you have regulatory requirements that data can't leave your on-prem environment, all these sorts of things lead you to go, gee, what happens if I cut the cord? Microsoft, however, it's a lot easier for billing and auditing if you're connected, because they have direct visibility into how many servers you're running, what versions they're on, whether they're being used. You know, if you think about all the complexities of on-prem licensing and true ups and all that sort of stuff. And so I think Azure Local, despite the name, currently does not work local only. It requires a connection to one of a handful of Azure zones. They've now have in preview the ability to do what they call disconnected operations. The biggest gotcha here is there's some nebulous language in the preview about customers having to demonstrate a valid business need for disconnected operations. Now, I don't know what that means. Microsoft doesn't define what it means. We've heard from some customers that it's pretty hard to clear that hurdle to get Microsoft to allow you to run disconnected. Now, what we don't know is this a preview limitation? Is there some technical thing that they're trying to keep it limited? Or is this a business restriction where Microsoft really would rather you not run disconnected and therefore wants to put a high hurdle in? We just don't know. And so that's why, as we'll talk, I think, in a bit, I think wait and see is probably the best advice for most customers.
Good. I'm glad you're right there, because I was thinking for parting advice for people who are listening, if you're already an Azure Stack HCI customer, what should you do? regarding Azure Local? And if you're not already using this, what should or shouldn't you do regarding Azure Local?
Yeah, if you're an existing customer, I think the small form factor is potentially interesting. If you're an existing customer and you've been having potential deployments that just economically you couldn't make pencil out, small form factor might suddenly make that viable. If you're an existing customer and you know you've the disconnected operations are interesting, that's potentially something you might be able to test out. Mm-hmm. For everyone else, I think this one needs time to mature. You can get nearly all the capabilities of Azure Local, the Kubernetes support, the local SQL server, the virtual desktop. There's other ways to get that without the complexity of the Azure Local deployment model, without the limitations of mm-hmm. Azure Local. Mm-hmm. And this right gets back to, I think, the as-built right now is not really very compelling for most new customers, but Microsoft's intent here of bridging their cloud capabilities and bringing cloud capabilities into a customer's data center is super interesting. We're just not quite there yet.
Right. Okay. All right. On that note, thank you so much, Greg. I'm really glad that you're back at Directions and on board here. Thanks.
It's my pleasure, Mary Jo, and it's great to be back, and it's great to spend some time thinking about how we can help our members make the most out of their Microsoft investments.
Great. Okay. To close, I would like to remind our listeners that they can find lots more coverage of all things Microsoft related on directionsonmicrosoft.com. In addition to the extensive reports and licensing reference materials that we create for our clients, we also have a blog, and the archives of all our podcasts are available on our site for members and non-members alike. Thank you for listening. If you have any questions, comments, or any topics that you would like to hear the Directions analysts cover in one of these podcasts, please do not hesitate to contact me on X at Mary Jo Foley. I'm also on Blue Sky now, too, Mary Jo Foley there. And give us a follow at Directions MSFT on X, or Directions on Microsoft on Blue Sky to get all of the latest Microsoft Enterprise product and licensing information. Thanks again.